Hey there, everybody, and welcome to Deconstructing Maya, the Season 3 wrap-up. I am Kevin, and joining me is everybody else.
I am Weston.
I'm Noel.
Insert My Little Pony reference here.
Oh, there are
ponies in space. Sorry.
So, Season 3, everybody Frelling dies.
Yes, the
Hooray!
Season.
Season overview over. That's kind of all of it.
Well, at least
we're done.
Honest right up
front.
It was a short season.
they were honest about right up front what this season was going to be, and boy, did they follow through.
They were not Frelling kidding.
No.
They only intended that to be an episode title, but it turned out to be quite prophetic.
Everybody Frelling dies.
It was a mission statement.
And this time, they didn't come back.
Yes, well, most of everybody died, and they stayed dead.
Well,
compared
Aaron's mom.
Yeah.
Aaron's mom died twice, kind of, one off screen.
She did.
Well, she actually didn't
but
die.
She
didn't
right?
die, though, so that doesn't count
strong
as much.
Implication.
But they left us with the perception that she had.
Yeah, but that's different from
they lied
like,
to us.
Showing people
they fooled us. They manipulated us.
That's different from like you know somebody
showing
dying,
you the body and then
like
whoops.
Showing you the body and then like oh
well,
yeah by the
there,
way
yeah.
we were just kidding.
That's not the writers messing with us. That's just Crace messing with us. That's a
yes.
whole different thing.
Which is kind of great. Although, like I said in the one of the more recent episode things, Stark's got to be really pissed off at the end of the season because he wasn't there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he tried to pass Talon along, and I'm sure he's always wanted to guide a spaceship to the other side, and he missed his chance.
He's like the guy in the casino trying all the slot machines, and then someone wins on a slot machine that he just passed.
And he's gone. He's gone looking for Zan. And Zan, here, girl. Man, I can hear you. Are you still there?
There you are.
I don't hear
you. I hear somebody's been playing Portal 2 recently.
I know, right?
What? Who? Lies. What?
I haven't. My computer can still only handle one.
Oh, man. Like...
Uh-huh.
If you can ever manage to actually play it, like, seriously, you
I
need
think.
To.
I started well, watching a
even if like you're,
I'm like, I have to stop this and wait until I can actually play it.
Wait, not yes. next time you're in town.
Yeah, seriously,
we'll go
even
rent
if you're...
it for the 360.
By that time, I'll probably
library.
Have it.
Oh well, then there you go. So
yes.
Everybody dies.
Everybody dies.
Hooray! And only some of them come back.
So. I wanted to touch upon a couple things, and if you guys don't mind, we really had this season kind of brought home the concept of wormholes as the primary plot device. And I mentioned this at the beginning of the season, is that the wormholes, even when they were in the foreground, they were still kind of in the background. It was kind of like an ancillary plot device where it was like it was there, but it really didn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until early on this season where the wormholes were the actual driving force of the season. Like,
which for being like the like rare freak occurrence that it was set up as like originally, it's kind of like very prevalent all of a sudden.
Well, I think what it is that in the first two seasons it was the unattainable goal, and in this season it showed that no, it's actually quite attainable. But
yeah.
this is
and
what happens when
you
attain it.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it has something more to do with how many people are looking for them. If you've only got one person who thinks that wormhole travel is possible, he's going to be looking everywhere, and he's only going to find like one planet that can only do it once every 7 years. But if you get a major peacekeeper research facility doing it and somebody else who's also let's say, Crichton's research, now everybody's looking for him, and oh, hey, there's a wormhole.
And let's not forget
it's the difference between stumbling across it and actively trying to trigger one.
Yeah.
Right. Finding a needle in a haystack is actually not that hard when you have, like, 20 people doing it.
Needle a haystack, a needle shaped
and
like
then one
a,
of them says
a needle, hay-shaped needle of death in a haystack full of
But again,
statues.
If you have 20 people looking that through it, you'll probably find it in a few days.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them's going to step on it, or it's going to get stuck in a finger, or it's going to blow up a planet.
Or if you get 20 people, it doesn't take that long for 20 people to just grab each piece of hay one at a time and try to see if it bends or if it snaps.
Yeah, it works.
I'm sorry, I'm carrying this metaphor beyond where it needs to go, but
you have taken it so far. Wow.
And then I put an icky twist on it. So anyways.
Yeah, but you're not.
What if there's an entire field full of hay as opposed to just a hay bale or a single hay stack in the top of a barn?
If you have an entire field full of hay, then you have some guarantee that someone has had sex in at least one of them.
That seems likely.
It's a hay-shaped needle of death in a haystack full of statues, which... No.
Which might also be made out of hay?
Are all of the statues weeping angels?
Yeah. Could be.
And now we're crossing...
They are weeping angels, but they are weeping angels that are made out of hay. They are weeping angels.
But the second you look at them, they turn into hay.
Anybody else want to see
the
Doctor Who Farscape crossover?
There's actually a decent one that I was reading the other day, and it really didn't go anywhere, so...
That's a pity.
Yeah, it wouldn't be Farscape if it wasn't, like, geeky and have, like, very devastating emotional turmoil mixed with very screwball humor, which Farscape can sometimes... which Doctor Who can sometimes do pretty well as well.
Which Doctor?
Well, we had the one plot that was almost like a Doctor Who plot, and then it turned all Tim Burton with Meltdown.
Yeah.
That was the Leviathan killing star, and
yeah.
It could have been a really good Doctor Who episode, and then Stark decided to become Tim Burton.
But, you know, that was actually my favorite part was when Stark did that. I loved it because that was so Stark.
It's like, woo!
Stark stepped up.
Stark is going to try to save the day in a classic Stark fashion, and. As is with Stark, it goes completely to shit.
Well, yeah. I like my opening to that episode. Like you have a great concept, and then the scariest thing happens. The scariest sentence in the world: Stark has a plan,
and there's no one there to ignore it.
No.
Ooh, or tongue him.
Here's where it really became obvious that Talon was crazy. Talon was egging him on.
Yes.
So it was like that's how you know that Talon is not really there.
Man, that poor kid.
Let's talk about Talon.
Indeed.
Before we talk about Talon, can I just say one thing about the wormholes?
Yes.
My main problem with the wormholes was I never understood the whole why are people liquefying thing.
They didn't really.
Unstable wormholes are the ones that liquefy people. It's not until you get into a stable wormhole that people can go through safely.
Yeah, but we never really.
Yeah, but Crichton's been through unstable ones before.
Yeah, exactly, and it was never really explained why or.
Is it because his ship doesn't have a shield, and then everyone else isn't realizing that their shield are causing a type of interference that does that?
It's been hinted that the Farscape module is kind of unique and special with wormhole-related stuff, and Crichton will only use that ship to go into wormhole.
Because it's so primitively built.
The Farscape module is a surfboard, and everyone else is trying to fly in bricks.
Well, I mean, we had that whole thing where Moya was stuck in a wormhole for 2 episodes, and
was a stable wormhole.
Was starting to deteriorate her organics.
Right. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it was probably because she was so big that it took a long time for that to happen.
It just strikes me as this is the writer just thinking of what would be a weird thing for wormholes to do to people and never really fully justifying it with their wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey explanation.
It was one of those things where they kind of needed to put something there, like, to...
Some sort of consequence.
Right. Some sort of stumbling block that they had to get over so that they didn't just automatically... So that they didn't just suddenly have that technology.
I think the big thing is, you know, I've said repeatedly that Farscape is kind of like taking old, like, 30s or 40s pulp adventure sci-fi stuff like Buck / Gordon and doing, like, a very modern deconstruction of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The whole wormholes are liquefying everybody because they're unstable feels like a 1930s, 40s pulp thing.
It does kind of, yeah.
It doesn't.
They explain everything in season 5.
Oh, wait.
Oh, man.
Okay, anyways, Talon.
Talon.
Yay, Talon. So we've had so gorgeous.
We've had Talon kind of in the background all throughout season two, mm-hmm. where he's popped up here and there. We've heard the exploits of him and Krace. Here in season three, this is where we really get to see him in action, both internally and externally as a character in his own right. And there's a lot going on with Talon.
Yeah, I just love how shocking and sudden it is when you realize just how screwed up and malicious he can be when we find out what he's been doing to Krace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The feedback source.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things that, like,
now.
Yeah, we had all that kind of stealth development that we talked about in season two with Krace and Talon. And now we're actually getting to see
the results of that.
The results of that, and mm-hmm. And we actually get to see what it means when what it actually meant that Krace has been trying to hold him back, mm-hmm. Which was kind of one of those things that you either could believe him or think he was like exaggerating or making it up, and then in this one you get the reveal, and it's like, no, he really is having issues.
Right. We all thought that Krace was just trying to manipulate him into becoming a weapon, when it turns out that no, he's trying to restrain the weapon.
Yeah.
He's trying to put the safety
everything
on.
Together.
To the point that it's killing him.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yet he's
physical
still willing to keep
feedback.
Doing it.
Ugh.
Because he's the one who created the monster. He's Frankenstein, and that's his monster.
Well, that brings up an entirely other concept, and one that I didn't even think to touch upon this season, is that Krace, part of why he takes it upon himself is that maybe he feels completely responsible for this abomination.
Oh, absolutely.
That he is, like, he's taking personal responsibility for this, and if anything's going to try to take it under control, it's the person who commissioned the project in the first place.
I think he also relates to Talon, because both of them were forced to become peacekeepers
mm-hmm.
against their will. You know, Krace was taken from his normal childhood and forced to become a peacekeeper, whereas Talon never had the opportunity to even have a normal childhood because of what Krace did. So
yeah.
I think there's some reflection.
He was technically born into service, like Aaron.
Yeah, but didn't he live on a farm with his father and his brother?
He did. That was the thing.
And then,
yeah.
When he was like 8 or 9 or something, he was taken away.
Yeah.
So he didn't grow up in like a carrier, like
yeah.
we see the kids in the last few episodes.
Yeah, that was so cool. How big is this carrier? It's got an entire park right.
And
in
it
the
says that that's one of them.
One of several, yeah.
This
one
is the
one
nice
of several.
One.
Yeah.
Well, and it's really like
this one has the benches.
You get like that sense of scale when you see all of these other full size ships going mm-hmm. around, and you see
including
how
Moya.
Yeah, including
in
Moya.
Moya.
Moya, and then
Moya
and they are
the
tiny compared to the command carrier.
Right, Talon is huge by this point, and he's inside the carrier.
With
he's not even taking up all the garage, yeah.
No,
yeah,
he's
not
plenty
even.
Of room left.
Yeah, I mean, that was just an amazing reveal. We've seen the command carrier so often, but never did we ever have a sense
there's
never, just how freaking huge it is.
Never any sense of scale there. And it's and what's great about that is that that's the same command carrier that we've seen since the first episode of season one.
Yes.
It's the same one.
And it still mm-hmm. looks like a gun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting concept to have them go back to that command carrier again, like especially with Krace and Aaron and even kind of Rigel, because all three of them had been there before.
It even creates a nice good motif for Scorpius and Krace and their relationship. If Scorpius took it from Krace, Krace destroys it.
Yeah.
Yeah. and a really neat little throwback in that Scorpius is now, for a little bit with Commandant Graeza, was in the same position that he put Krace into.
Yeah.
And Scorpius is finally getting his comeuppance as far as that goes.
How's that for irony?
Although there's not, he doesn't really get the time to have that play out.
Oh,
I'll
no.
I'll bet he responds to it a little more coolly than Krace did.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he was fully able.
There was yelling.
Well, yeah, to be fair, he did kind of flip out on John.
He flipped out a bit, but there's also the
fact
that...
Oh, he only threatened to destroy Earth. I mean, come on.
Yeah. But there's also the fact that had the command carrier not been destroyed, I'm sure that Scorpius would have found a way to keep it out of Graves' hands.
Oh, he probably would have killed her and buried the body in a sun somewhere, but...
Yeah. Shit,
buried in a sun.
Right, but...
But you also, in that whole thing, you do get the sense that he's kind of over time been losing the loyalty of his own crew.
And he hasn't really had the loyalty of his own crew. Yeah. He just
scared the piss out of everybody, and he kind of lost a bit of his threat when he brought John in as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once you say this enemy that I'm pursuing for this entire year or so. Let's let him on and don't anybody
diplomatic
bother him.
Diplomatic immunity. Full the
sense of threat
benefits.
Is...
And open up the rec room. Go on. Go on. I know I said officers only, but you know what? These are important guests.
And then we get jetpacks.
And the surgery to fix Dargu. Because, man, those little bolts that he's had in his collarbone have been there for so long.
Since, like, at the very beginning of the series, Moya is escaping from
that command carrier.
How involved were they in everybody's imprisonment?
I don't know.
It's like, because that's an interesting potential bit of backstory there, too.
You know, at least Rigel was passed around a bit, because, he was under Durka for a while.
Yeah. Well, and he said something along the lines that he was held prisoner for, 100 cycles?
It was 130, I think.
I mean, what always surprised me is that, you know, given the size of Moya, why does it only have, like, 4 prisoners?
Well, it's also a prison transport. The command carrier itself has a lot of room for prisoners, but if it's on a very specific mission, it can't really make a side trip to deliver prisoners from one place to another.
They may have been moving those 4 from one place.
Here's an idea. What if those 4 were on the command carrier and they stole Moya from the command carrier and were making an escape on her?
Not possible, because all of them had...
They had cells.
They had their specific cells on Moya. That's true. Rigel specifically had his cell on Moya.
And he had to liberate his stuff.
And how come we never saw at all any dead peacekeepers on Moya?
They flushed them out the airlock.
Yes.
They had control over the airlock at that point.
Yeah, we didn't... Yes. We don't know how far
in the middle of a firefight.
Well, we don't know how far into their escape John meets up with them.
Probably fairly late. I imagine that Rigel actually set up some false orders to get everyone off, and then he poisoned the 1 or 2 remaining, and then released Dargo and Zan, and they went out. And
let's not forget, there's a bunch of hidey holes on Moya that we still haven't seen yet. I mean, they could have. Hell, Pilot could have just nudged him off of one of the platforms in the den, and nobody would have seen him because they're in that big pile of guano.
Yeah.
Probably still in that big pile of guano.
You know, I'm going to say this is a story I want to see told at some point. I mean, especially now that we have the context of where the series has been.
Yeah.
That could be
cool. I mean, because I think that would... I don't know if maybe the comics has told it. If not... People making the comics tell it. I want
to
hear.
So,
that
if
story.
Anybody here at the art department of Henson Studios who reads Deconstructing Moya has any control over the comics, we would love to see the escape of Moya, the original escape of Moya. So,
also,
pass
we
it
love
along.
You and you're awesome,
Ricky Manning. Pass it on.
Yes, if Rockne S. O'Bannon manages to hear this, please admit that you're Brent Moat. I'm sorry, that's a joke no one will get.
Who is Brent Moat?
I'm not going to explain it because then everyone will get it.
Never explain the joke. Well, please,
I'm just waiting. Maybe one day, 10 years from now, he'll be looking through Farscape Phantom, come across that, and go, damn it, he figured it out. Sorry.
So,
it's a pseudonym that I believe he is. So, anyways.
Yeah, Talon, we get such a full circle with him. He starts off the season by rescuing Moya and everybody, and then we see him go completely batshit insane. And then way at the end of this, then he comes full circle and does his big repentance scene, which, how amazing
was
that?
Is it repentance or is it just...
Oh, that
was
so epic.
Well, it counts as...
They never really let you clearly find out.
It's redemption at the very least.
It's open for interpretation.
Yeah.
If it's not repentance, it's definitely redemption.
Because you don't know if he's been completely cured or anything by that point.
Right. We don't know exactly how
much
has been...
No, but actions speak louder. Yeah.
Well, we don't know how much has actually
been
done.
Even during his crazy bits, he had moments of heroism.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and it's interesting. I mentioned this in the write-up for that one. It's interesting that he makes that final decision while effectively all of his peacekeeper parts are neutered.
Shut down, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So and he makes that decision effectively, as a Leviathan. Yeah, mm-hmm. effectively, yeah. He is...
The final sacrifice.
It, yeah. For the first and only time, he is fully a Leviathan, and he does his final huzzah using tools that are available to Leviathans and not any of his super special peacekeeper stuff.
And in keeping to his peacekeeper heritage, doing it in one of the most violent ways possible.
Of course.
So,
but
still being true to himself.
That people can still escape from.
Mm-hmm. So, well, so violent. But, I mean, I never said that Talon was bad. I mean, he was just mostly misunderstood.
He was broken.
Misguided and crazy.
Yeah, he was...
With a significant bit of crace in his head. Man, that would drive anybody nuts, regardless of where he started.
You have to wonder if crace is his Harvey.
Well, speaking of crace...
I've thought that so much.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, of course, Harvey initially wanted to control Crichton and has now eventually just kind of settled to the point where it's a kind of symbiotic relationship.
And what I love is that we actually got to explore both ways that that could have gone with the, both of the Crichtons. We had them doing their final... We had their final showdown, and then we had them come to terms with each other, and both happened, and both were valid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would say that the main difference between those two things happening was the animated episode, where Crichton actually makes peace with Harvey and shows him that his way is not the only way.
Yes. Right.
And had Talon Crichton had that moment, I mean, who knows what would have happened.
Right.
He would have died of radiation.
If I can say real quick, like, that was a plot device that could have been so cheesy and so not great, and they made it into something so, like, fantastic.
Yeah.
Or Farscape, where even the filler, or the, I don't want to say filler, the breather episodes are still pretty heavy.
Right.
But
even when they do a Chuck Jones animation, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, specifically, I was talking about... Specifically, I was talking about the twinning thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's a concept that could have been done in one.
When it first happened, that was what Eat Me was when that first came up, because honestly I wouldn't have been shocked had they just killed off one of the two,
like they did with My Three Crichtons
twins
with Fiona and Darga,
right? Mm-hmm. And they didn't, and they not only got to split up the crew and keep Crichton in every episode that way, they got to explore some really interesting concepts that I was really impressed that they got kind of deep into.
And what's fantastic is that they had their opportunity to take the easy way out and knock off one of the Crichtons in that very next episode with the head crab, and they didn't. They really easily could have done that.
There was the head crab and there was the explosion. They could have killed both of them simultaneously, which would have been really awkward.
Right, and I love that they used the two Crichtons. You knew one of them was going to die.
But
they did it in the way that would be the most dramatically powerful in terms of have Aaron fall in love with one, have him solve all of his problems, he finds a wormhole, he cures himself of Harvey, and then take him away, and she's left with the John who didn't go through those experiences.
It's almost a Joss Whedon kind of a concept. We have our happiness, and then we punish that.
It's kind of one of those concepts that writes itself, because that's like...
Well, and it's one of those things that... Yeah, at the end of that episode, it was like he couldn't survive that, because then that effectively could end the series. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the fact that he had accomplished that much.
Successful.
Exactly. Right. It's like, then where do you go with that?
It's like he signed his death warrant. Yeah. You know, he can't survive that, or else the show would have nowhere to go. But then, you know, this is Farscape. You know, they could always take it of he knows that. What happens now as a result of him knowing that?
That's true. I wouldn't put it past them to go to that kind of place and then keep going.
Right. If any show can do it, Farscape can.
And now that the other Crichton is starting to get back to that point, now we're going to have that.
That is true. Yeah.
So.
And then that's the other thing is that the Jack alien, the alien disguised as Crichton's dad, is now out of the picture, so he can never help the Moyajahn in the same way he did the Talonjahn.
And there are other ancients, but they also didn't know what this one was doing.
Right,
they're,
and
they're out of power now. They're stuck wherever it was they wormholed off to a planet with, I think it was no native inhabitants, but a reasonably nice place. Not terribly far up at wormhole, but conventional space, a ways out there. Far enough that they won't be threatened by anybody.
Well, space is big.
Yes,
well, and really, really
then the Borg show up.
And then the Borg. Ah, Borg. And, they look a little bit like Species 8472, don't they?
A little bit.
And Furlough is still out there somewhere.
Furlough is still out there?
I'm trying to remember, does I know this is a little bit of a switch. Do we ever see Furlough again in the series? Or is that something they were planning for Season 5? I don't know.
I think that's...
We do not see Furlough, but we... No.
The Farscape Encyclopedia page, the Wikia page, says that she's only in those two episodes, and the character.
So that's
is
a
not
plot
thread
they never get to finish up.
That,
well,
that
if that's an interesting thing, because she's out there, she knows. I mean, she's lost all her research, but she still has.
She still took the pot apart and put it together again. So
right,
and added the American flag to it.
Yeah. And she's a smart enough, engineer that she could with time put the thing back together again potentially. And
probably. Oh,
and
that's the difference
on top
between
of that,
the Prowlers and
she
the pod.
May
can flag.
Yeah.
I saw the flag as proof that she is extremely attentive to detail, which means that she probably could put that thing back together from memory if she wanted.
Right. I think so too. It's possible that not only, does she know all of what she knows, but she might have been around long enough to witness what the wormhole thing could do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which means that the Skerrans that don't have her research might then still get word of what they're looking for. And
Right.
maybe double their efforts because of it.
Now, I guess it doesn't go anywhere, but it would have been an interesting concept to explore further.
It could still be a background event because we know that the Skerrans are still out there and the Skerrans are still trying to do this, and that the Peacekeepers don't have their research anymore, but they also know that the project existed.
Right.
And so, I mean, there's always background.
And this is again why I'm going to be curious to check out the comics when we're done with this, because I'm so curious, because I know it's done by the guy who created the show, so it's definitely going to be a canon continuation. Mm-hmm. So is he going to be bringing Furlough back?
So we'll find out.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Now, Krace. We talked about Talon.
Krace is, for me, up there with Rorschach and... Oh, crap. What's the guy from Dollhouse, the computer designer programmer dude?
Topher.
He's up there with Rorschach and Topher as one of the most unforgettable mindfuck characters around. Because you both hate him and love him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who hated Topher? Nobody hated Topher.
How could anybody hate Topher?
I hated Topher because he sold out.
He's adorable.
Well, he did good things in the end, but he's the guy who's knowingly working for a prostitution ring,
Yeah, but he's still adorable.
And
I named my computer after him, okay?
Oh, but again, he's by the end of that series, he goes through such a complicated arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that
and that's
he's
not
just
a bad
one
bit.
Of the most unforgettable people around. Same with Krace. Same with even Rorschach, That's Rorschach I hold up as one of the examples of how a character should be.
Mm-hmm.
In
Rorschach's
terms of a defining arc and exploration, and Krace nails it.
I do believe Rorschach was the primary character of Watchmen.
Oh, of course he was.
So. Well, I
and there's so much you learn about him, and so much you see about him, and he goes through so much, and yet he's still him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
For more on this, and Krace. See episode 14 of Made a Fail.
Yes. I mean, but then that's Krace. Krace just sneaks up on you and just becomes such an amazing presence.
He does, and it's I know we talked about this last time around too, but it's really interesting to me that he was such a weak presence as a villain.
He was a forgettable villain, but as a protagonist, holy shit.
Well, I mean,
he turns around and becomes this
Once
amazing
he found
character.
His path in life, he finally defined himself.
Right.
You weren't really expecting him to remain as a character like as he did in season three. You're thinking, okay, he's going to have like one or two episodes like he did in season one, season two, and then he's going to be gone again. But no, this time he sticks around and he actually explains things and he develops. Yeah. And now he's an actual person as opposed to, I am hunting
even
you.
Just that twisted relationship he has with Aaron, where you can tell he has a bond for
there.
And there's just that great moment where she says, you, if I close my eyes hard enough and pretend you're someone else, maybe.
Yeah.
You know what I love about
that? Was such a painful scene.
Yeah.
So
painful episode.
You know, though I had to have my eyes closed for half of it.
You know what's fantastic?
What?
Talon was trying to get Aaron and Krace together.
Yes.
Talon is a shipper.
Yes, he is. Yes. He's a ship.
And it's a fandom that just can't happen. They ain't going to work together. There's too much.
But I like that they worked past it. You know, they
acknowledged it and then they moved past it. Yeah,
right.
And just ignore it.
And it gets to the point where she's more comfortable with him than she is with Moya Crichton after everything she went through with Talon Crichton.
Yeah, and that has to be driving him nuts.
Yeah. Crichton? Yes.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
And it's one of those things that, like, there's still always that potential, like, at the back of your mind that you can think that, you know, is this all for real what he's been going through, or is he just biding his time until he gets his opportunity? And, like, to the point that after everything that has happened in that last episode he's in, you get that moment where
he sells
everybody out and you believe it.
But then, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's a Crichton plan. Then it's a Crichton plan. And Crichton, and you know why Crichton's even more
Crichton's
pissed
Crichton
off at Krace?
Crichton's plan would end up with everyone getting away. Krace is, me and this thing I've been fighting for all these years, we're dead.
But you know what's so great about Krace's Crichton plan? Is that as pissed off as Crichton is about what Krace did, he's even more pissed off that he can't really disprove what Krace did as wrong.
Yeah,
he can't say that Krace is wrong.
I don't agree with calling it a Crichton plan, because Crichton's plan would be coming up with some crazy way to ignite the engine and all that stuff and everything.
Which is what they were
doing. It would blow it up in a way that knocks everyone who's still alive off into space where they can still be picked up and rescued. And he would come up with this big crazy thing, and Krace is just, no, me and Talon are going to kill ourselves. It'll take the ship up with us.
You know what would have happened? No. A Crichton plan would have tried to ignite the starburst, and then something crazy would have happened, and Crichton would have been.
He would have tried to create a wormhole from the starburst so he could ride the ship out through the ship without having to destroy it.
All while throwing up the horns and sticking out his tongue, going "fuck yeah!"
And Scorpius are in the middle of a fist fight.
Yes.
Yep.
And then, he'll be like holding Scorpius. See, look at your baby. And then he'll end up getting his ass kicked by Scorpius, but then Scorpius just leaves him because he has nothing else. So anyway,
and there will be a dinosaur, and that dinosaur will have laser beams,
Rigel will be riding the dinosaur,
and those laser beams will also shoot tacos.
Yes, taco beams. And
Rigel will be riding it, going, "There you go, old gal. Let's get it."
What was that phrase that I coined early on in this season? Crichton's Law, where anything that can go wrong does go wrong specifically because Crichton is involved.
Well, it's kind of like everything that can go wrong and everything that can go right both happen at the same time whenever he's around.
Right.
Yeah.
They both kind of feed into each other. It's Crichton is let's take the yin and the yang and beat them to death with each other.
Things that can go right do, and the things that can't go wrong somehow do.
Crichton manages to bring harmony to the universe
the in a way that
holds it in his hand and then beats everybody up with it.
Right. I mean, I got how all of his heroic rescues and victories are now like the stuff of horror stories that everyone tells around the universe. God, have you heard what Crichton did lately?
Yeah.
I just love that he's become this legend. The dude who blew up a planet to escape.
Yeah. Well,
he went 200 years back in time? So Crichton, he's actually been here for 200 years. Did you know that? Oh my, wow.
He's left such a mark on the world, he went back and left it on the past.
I love that. Yeah, I do love that it's become this, he's become this legend, and it's gotten to the point where the Peacekeepers as a whole, who arguably at one point just decided that he wasn't worth, you know, dealing with, have now had to come back around and go, okay, we need to do something because we're becoming a laughingstock.
Right.
The good He's news, embarrassed the them. Luxons have entered into a mutual defense pact with us. The Where's bad news, they're the only people who will, because Crichton is making everybody else laugh at us.
See, but you'd think that would actually be a selling point for Scorpius when he goes to appear before the High Council, would say, okay, look at everything that Crichton has done. Imagine if we took him and aimed him at the Scarrans. They would be sold.
They would have to get him first.
Well, but he That's was already actually, with them. Actually... He was working with them on the wormholes, remember, when Grazes yeah. showed up.
Well, and see, that's one of those things that if Scorpius was a little less laser point focused on the wormhole thing, that would actually have been a really funny and also really awesome idea for him to have.
Using the wormholes on the Scarrans. Let's use John.
Crichton is now our secret weapon.
And Scorpius is so badass that he would have rocked that council session, too.
Suicide death pod.
The only thing that would have made it better is if he brought in Grace to make that speech. This is what I've learned in my time with John Crichton.
And see what I could actually see happening too, like in this. You
this
know,
is the man I've... that made a Budong throw up. He's
he
so vile that
Budong's the... throat and got it to throw up half of a planet.
Oh no, that was the other one.
Yeah, but it
Crichton
was still,
is
it was
so
still
badass
Crichton.
That he can be in two places at once.
It was still
Crichton is simultaneously
see, what
if John Crichton were fighting a Budong, he probably would have shoved his sand down its throat too.
and then there would be two Crichtons in the Budong.
Even John Crichton will do what John Crichton does.
Yes. But no, like what I could actually see happening with that alternate version of the story, I guess, would be like not necessarily even Scorpius trying to make him an official part of the Peacekeeper plan necessarily, but setting up things so that John is then thrown headfirst into conflicts with the Scarrans so that he then has to deal with it.
Yeah, but wouldn't that have been a season finale cliffhanger if John puts on a Peacekeeper uniform and steps up in front of the High Council?
Oh, totally, I agree.
Let's work together.
Oh, I agree. That would have been awesome. But I'm just saying that there's...
And you know it would last an episode before everything goes to hell.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Of course.
Because it's John Crichton.
If that,
someone would accuse him of doing something that he has no idea what happened, and in escaping, he causes more things to blow up.
Well, that was
Wait,
me
you
that
can
was
actually
really
do that? I was thinking, like, someone would do something, like set up an event and say, oh, no, Crichton did this, and Crichton would be like, wait, what is that? How does it work? And how can I use it to
you know,
make wormholes?
John Crichton is so badass that he can kick your ass twice at the same time in two different places.
What if he exploded and then exploded again?
And from within that Crichton. Explosion within him will be another Crichton with a fist pointed out that'll clock you in the jaw.
John Crichton, the Chuck Norris of the universe.
But in so doing, he ends up running over a puppy, which makes him even more guilty.
Ah, yes.
Because with Crichton, you can't have a victory without a loss.
No.
No.
I mean, hell, you can't have a victory without realizing that what he set right was something that he made wrong in the first place.
Right. Or you can't rescue the universe without ruining your own personal life. Or vice versa.
So what are the characters we have this season? Yeah.
Chiana's gone, like...
You know what?
180.
What's happened here is you remember the earlier seasons how Zahn would always be chewing out Chiana as though she was the kid who was always getting into trouble, and Zahn would be all losing her temper. Chiana's become that.
Yeah, she
has. She's
kind of taken over the stern mother Zahn role.
Well, ever
and
since
she's
ever
like
since
the stern,
died.
She's like the stern teenage babysitter.
There's been a gap.
She's like the stern teenage babysitter trying to be the stern mother.
Yeah. Well, Zahn really left an impression on her. I mean, out of all the people that, out of all the lives that Zahn's touched,
that was the only other one that had full body paint.
Right. What I was going to say is that was the one that was that Chiana's was the one that she had the most impact on.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone had more time with Zahn than Chiana did, but Chiana had the furthest to go.
Well, that's the thing about Chiana is her. Her enmities and her relationships are always more extreme than everyone else's. That's just kind of the nature of who she is. She's so over the top all the time.
Well, what's great is that she never had anybody to be loyal to. I mean, all she had was her brother, and he left her And I mean, for good reason, but he still left her.
Right.
And now she's found this other family. She's not going to let that family go.
Right.
And until she does.
Well, I mean, she keeps talking about it, and she used to be trying to do it. But every single time when the chips are down this entire season, she's been the one saying, no, we need to go back for this. We need to put our lives on the line and get our people back. This is our family, and nothing's going to take that away from us.
See, if season two was about Dargo growing up, this is kind of almost a background story of Chiana growing up a bit.
Chiana growing up, yeah. And then, with, I mean, aside from Crayson Town.
Right. And now she has crazy psychic telepathy.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of the psychic vision.
See, and look, I don't necessarily mind it. I just wish that they had, like, they kind of go into this a little, but they don't really make anything of it.
Where justified it for me.
They don't, well, I would have liked to see it have more consequences, because they kind of edge into that where she's getting
these.
She's getting
these. They only use it as a limited plot device.
Whenever the plot needs it to happen.
Exactly. But, I mean, they kind of edge into it where she's not getting context for these visions that she's getting.
It's a spidey sense.
It would be nice to have seen a little bit stronger of something where, like, she gets a vision and without the context for it, she makes the wrong decision.
Isn't that what happened with everybody on the space diner?
Yeah, but there was nothing she could do about it. So there was no actual consequence to
it. It should have been that if she saw something and actually made something happen that ended up causing
that actually made a problem, or
and make that a central plot. That
I think would make it a lot better of a lot more acceptable.
They should just grab Doyle and be done with it.
I think the peacekeepers that she saw in the IENSH episode were the ones that were coming after Moya, the ones that forced them to Starburst.
Which episode?
The IENSH. The ones where the peacekeepers are in the diner with Dargo and Rigel. And she sees peacekeepers, and then Putnam and Moya detect peacekeepers. They Starburst.
Wouldn't it be great if, you know,
Starburst somewhere else?
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if Scorpius was there to negotiate a truce, and because she sees something and reacts wrongly, that's what brings down Graeza on them.
Yeah. So
because of one of her visions and her reacting wrongly to it and making an assumption, she's what alerts the other peacekeepers to then suddenly starting to turn on Scorpius and looking into what he's doing and ruining this entire plan. If
exactly.
they had
like
tied her visions into something like that, it would have worked for me. But as it is, they're just a kind of weak plot device.
They're a little too convenient right now.
Exactly.
And like I said, if you add some consequence to her starting to rely on these things now, that would have made it a little bit easier to swallow.
Try to like play up with it more, like it just kind of starts happening to her in normal life on small things instead of these big things, and it gets to the point where she now can no longer differentiate between the present and what she's seeing in the future. Like, make an entire episode out of that.
Well, and also going into
in time.
Remember that one episode where Crichton kept flashing back and or flashing forward and all that stuff.
Back to the future.
The one with the worst alien ever.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's that's been I think one of the weaknesses of the season is that, and it's a tiny weakness.
Right.
That's one of the few tiny weaknesses I have with this season. That and the liquefying wormhole thing. But other than that, and it's a fantastic season aside from
those. Oh, it was a very, very solid season.
This has been the strongest season yet.
Oh, yeah. I think it's probably my favorite. It's, well, not probably. It's definitely my favorite.
I don't even think this season I've mentioned the balls of Farscape, you know, the three dangling tentacle testicles of Farscape that keep slapping people in the face with. I haven't mentioned them, but that's what this season is. The balls of Farscape, always there, right in front of you, banging in the eyes.
That sounds accurate.
It's my old metaphor I haven't dug out yet. Stunned everyone into silence. But no, I mean, that's what this season is, the season that doesn't hold back. It's the mission statement of the season of death. This is the season that's pretty much going to break your soul, but still inspire you.
Shit happens, and who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
Yes.
No, wait, maybe.
No,
which Ghostbusters I just didn't see in the theater, so haha.
Ghostbusters would have been handy during the energy writer episode. Because I mean, those
if they only needed the common everyman New York wisdom of Winston Zeddemore, it would have all so much better.
Pilot, when somebody asks if you're a god, you say yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, why don't we talk about then Dargo and his ship?
Dargo, the as yet unnamed ship that has been around the entire season and still hasn't gotten the name yet.
That he has to coat his DNA so other people can use too.
Yes, what exactly is he using to coat the entire ship in his DNA? We do not need to know.
Crichton doesn't want to know. If Crichton doesn't want to know, we don't want to know either.
He just spends an hour a day licking things.
Yes, with his very long tongue.
Crichton has his gloves. He's fine.
Yeah, that's why he's got his gloves.
I just thought of what the name of the ship is, and now he's licking the interior. Thanks, Noel.
One thing that I loved is, you know, we've seen the fire. You guys made a point in the last episode here that I forgot to touch on, but it was something I thought was, we've seen Talon's destructive power, and it is destructive. It is violent. Mm-hmm. This one, when we see it destroy the Leviathan, it's almost like a transcendent, beautiful moment of this becoming this kind of glowing, crystalline, translucent thing that we then pass through. It's almost like a spiritual experience as they're destroying this thing. It's beautiful, even though it's the horror of they've just taken a life of a mother who's lost her child, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of it's kind of the epitome of Luxons are warriors. Luxons are very definitely warriors.
And
you would definitely understand that when the Luxons made a warship like this, that they made it with like everything that they could.
Yeah.
Did they make it?
What didn't surprise me was the destructive power of it. What surprised me was the beauty of it. The elegance of just the way that it dissolves.
Yeah, I have to agree with that.
It was hauntingly beautiful. It was horrifying.
It's a sharp contrast to Talon's weaponry and his explosions. Mm-hmm.
It became this crystalline thing that then just faded away. You know,
but then you realize that exactly what that beautiful thing was. That's where the haunting comes in.
And that's where the horror comes in. Of, I just appreciated horror.
Yes.
And that I think was just so powerful. That was just a moment that just caught me by surprise. And I forgot to mention it in my review.
That whole episode, that whole episode could have been just
filler.
Could have been just complete filler. And it really wasn't. And
yeah, especially after the episode right before it, which is like the series it could have been a series finale. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had said at the beginning of mine that like I was really worried that episode wasn't going to be able to live up to it.
Right, and what I liked about this episode was it was almost like a promise of season four of saying, but wait, we do still have more to say.
Mm-hmm. Right, there's still like, we're not done yet.
And it's really led into a whole lot of concepts that season four is going to touch upon. I mean, it introduced Nana Peepers.
Yeah.
Nana Peepers.
Who, for...
The Stygian Witch, yes.
Such an amazing introduction.
Yes.
I mean, you know that she's got her own agenda. We don't know what that agenda is. We don't know if it's good. We don't know if it's bad. We know that she's been helping or, quote-unquote, helping Crichton along. But what are her reasons? Why is she doing this? Why is she sticking around? Right. And who the frel is she?
See, as I mentioned, I don't remember much of season four. I have like little bits that I remember. Like, as I said, I forgot that Crace and Talon sacrifice happened at the end of season three. I didn't think that happened until Peacekeeper Wars.
I was actually homeless during most of season four, so I only caught like one or two episodes of it. So I didn't. This is all going to be new to me.
Yeah.
Yay, I'm not the only new person.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I know a lot of wild stuff happens. This is going to be a very wild season. That's about all I know. But most of the most memorable things in Farscape, the scenes that I just have stuck with me since I watched this show like a decade ago, have been in season three. Mm-hmm. Especially the great shot of Crichton waking up in a window front and realizing he's wearing stockings and garters. And
that scream and the little dance was amazing.
I loved that episode.
That has always been my favorite image in Farscape.
My fiance made me rewind that twice.
And plus, one of the greatest episodes ever. Just let's do a crazy, drunk, What the Hell Happened Last Night episodes.
It was
Dargo and Fishnet. You know what is so great about that? We're so used to Dargo and his Dargo makeup that when we actually saw more of the characters of the actor's face in the other suit, it didn't look real.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we're so used to the Dargo prosthetics.
Well, I find that every time I see like Gigi Edgley or what's the name of the actor who plays Dargo when they're out of makeup, it's just so
Anthony Simcoe.
I was thinking you were going to say.
I think Virginia Hay, it's a little different because I knew her before Farscape. So.
Mad Max,
and she was a Bond girl.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And,
which one?
But yeah, but with Gigi Edgley and like.
She looks completely different.
She does. By the way, she is absolutely gorgeous.
Yes.
And I'm just so stunned by her constant athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
And the physicality she always brings to Shyanna.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a unique way of moving. It's like part feline, part bird.
Yeah,
it's like the cat was chasing the bird and instead mated with it and ended up with.
Well, and we mentioned this
and
last
then
season.
Dumped it in grade die.
Well, when we mentioned this last season when we had the other Nabari there, that they were taking their physical and vocal cues from her concept of
because
the
it's
character.
Such an established persona.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody's really mentioned, but the fact that the other Australian actors that play peacekeepers, they adjust their accents to match what Claudia Black does.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's
really?
Just, yeah.
That is interesting. Not just generic Australian accents, but specific Australian peacekeeper accents.
It's the specific kind of blend of Australian and a little bit of British that Claudia Black has.
They try to bring a sense of continuity to everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they pay attention to that level of detail.
There's a level of detail that they have that's absolutely fantastic.
It's a good thing that Crichton doesn't try to imitate peacekeepers anymore, because that would really stand out.
And speaking of Australian actors, now we have to talk about Jewel.
Of course. Do we have to?
Oh my god, it took a long time for her to fit in.
It did. It's
almost like she fits in now just because it took us long enough that we've gotten used to her.
Yeah. Well, to her credit, she did eventually get to the point where like I was okay with her being there.
Well, she became less of a whiny character and actually started to actually actively fit in.
Yeah, that time travel episode, for God, it was just like, let's throw her in mud, have her drink piss, slam her into a wall a few times until she finds the portal. It's just like, you could tell whoever wrote that episode was like, I don't like this character either.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, she's eventually grown into, she was like Paris Hilton, essentially, and then kind of grew into an interesting character once they kind of found out, let's make her the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which at first,
great episode
where
her and Grace are putting together that other thing.
Oh, that like that. Honestly, for me, that was like the final selling point for her. For me,
yeah.
Just
the great interest.
Like, she had already started
together.
Oh yeah, like she had already started getting there, but like that scene finally, like I was finally like, okay, she's one of the crew now. That's okay.
I mean, I could see that scene working if she had to work with Dargo or Crichton or Rigel, but it's all the funnier because she has to work with badass Grace.
Yes.
Just that great bit where the eye lands on her lap and they look at each other and then scream.
Now, here's an interesting thing. Speaking of Jewel, there's a little bit of a dropped plot thread. I don't know if we want to call it dropped or if we want to put it shelved of a plot thread that was mentioned first at the end of season 2 and then mentioned again at the beginning of season 3, where we have the concept of the Interians being genetically related to humans.
Well, I have to wonder, this is what I'm looking forward to in season 4, do they bring that up again?
No, that doesn't come
up.
Actually, I don't think the actual thing comes into play until the Peacekeeper Wars, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll keep my fingers crossed
for the comics, though. Because, yeah, that is a plot thread worth exploring. But then again, it's like Star Trek Next Generation had that episode where they find out that all of the alien races that are of bipedal nature are all related to this kind of ancient ancestor race. And, like, they just, as soon as that episode, like, kind of everyone dropped with a thud and no one liked it, they were like, okay, we're never talking about that again.
But they still mention...
A terrible sheen.
But they still mention in like books and some and throwaway lines in episodes. They mention the concept of seed races in Star mm-hmm. Trek too. So it's like it's continuity that nobody really wants to acknowledge, but they still mention it just to throw it out there.
I think that's probably just you know the occasional writer who was a fan of the concept was like, "Hey, I'm gonna slip it in."
But I think that's the only way that the Star Trek universe works. I mean, any kind of interbreeding between disparate races, they have to have some kind of genetic similarity. And,
right.
some
and just the fact that they're all humanoid and bipedal, you know.
Yeah,
I think that was their way that, of you trying would wind to up with something have like a Londa reason Malari. For actors and makeup. Mm-hmm. You know,
how many races in the universe can cheat at cards using their genitalia? Only
what I like about Farscape is that. Finally, we have Jim Henson Studios, so not all aliens look like humans in makeup.
And, I do like that.
And it does, but...
And interestingly enough, all the ones that look kind of like humans and Sebastians, we get the throwaway line of, oh, they're an offshoot
the Sebastian
from
colonies,
Sebastians.
Yeah.
They're like genetic offshoot, genetic cousins, a little bit of a side evolution. I mean, the fact that... Sebastians and Luxans are able to interbreed means that there's at least, if not a shared ancestry, at least a little bit of compatibility.
Right.
I mean, even if Jothi is a mule, which means that he would be sterile.
Yeah.
Mean, the fact that there was enough compatibility to make a mule out of him is that kind of signifies a lot.
You also have to wonder if there's also like advances in genetic sciences that can kind of smooth over that.
Well, if they can turn
like if
Aaron
she took
into
some
a
pills
pilot
during,
in like
if she took
an
some
hour.
Pills during conception or while her pregnancy was developing, that would kind of help deflect genetic interference like that.
Maybe they just stuck something.
That would be hand wavy.
Yeah.
I'd accept it.
Delicious flip out, no.
At least they you know they're thinking about it in some way.
Yeah.
And then like I know there's the whole Aaron pregnancy and
surprise!
I remember some of how it plays out, but I know Tessa hasn't seen this season. I know, Kevin, you have a very faint memory of it. So I'm going to be very curious to revisit it. And
it's actually Rigel's.
I so don't want to tell you something.
Uh-oh. Okay, I'm shutting up.
isn't it amazing how accidentally insightful she always is?
She's amazing. How does she do that?
Tessa, like, it's uncanny. Not Rigel's, but what you just said ties into something.
It's going to be very interesting that you said that.
Yes.
Boy.
we will
it's
not
like
speak
uncanny.
Of it further, yeah.
Speaking of which, now that we've finally gotten to that point, we mentioned this. I don't know if we mentioned it actually in the final edited version of the last time we did this or if it was just the uncut conversation that we had. Midway through season two.
If it was about Farscape, I probably left it in.
Midway through season two, Tessa had an offhand comment of, well, wouldn't it be fantastic if Crichton died and the show was able to go on? And I was like, well, you know, I really want to talk about that.
Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned that, and now we finally got to that, and it's like, well, look.
Well, and see, it was one of those things that, like, he really had to, like, sew his mouth shut to keep from hinting towards anything. Like it was.
Like, I was trying.
Oh, trust me, you have no idea of what it is that we're referring to when it comes to Rigel. So
yes, I think we need to stop.
When it comes to like the whole John dying and the show going on without him, it's like the writers thought of it and they thought of it in a way that you would never expect.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So trust them. Even if we give our hints, trust me, you don't know what you're expecting.
Hints? What hints? We're not giving hints.
No, I think we should stop obliquely referring to it.
Indeed.
Though.
Yes. Instead, I want to obliquely refer to how it was in Crichton's fantasy. They got Pilot at the table.
Yeah.
It was a fantasy.
Carefully.
It was him trying to have all the best. That was
there
just
was
an interesting idea. Crichton wanted
it was...
to have the best possible dream fantasy scenario.
They
and
had
it
a
just
Moya
constantly
cake.
Being fallen apart by his realization of no, it wouldn't actually work.
They had a
right.
Moya
there was
cake.
A scene cut out that had him in a carnival as the, I don't know, the whatever it was, four-armed monster from outer space. He went there after he was fired from MIT for giving a lecture, I believe, on, what was it, FTL hedge drive physics in his native language.
That's fantastic. But yeah, no, I mean, as far as that dream goes, I mean, he they even had a Moya cake, so Moya was still at the wedding in spirit.
Right, but
and then they shot
a dream.
It and was, then they it blew was, it up.
It wasn't even a dream. It was, this is what people do when they're in a relationship problem of they're working out the scenarios. What are their hopes for a relationship? What are their fears for the relationship? How do they try to work out in their mind the best way to make it work, even though they know the lingering, or they don't want to admit to the lingering reality that it's just not going to work.
Right.
Yeah. You just had it help along slightly by the nanopeepers.
So. Oh, we have.
Yes.
We know where you're coming from, man. We feel you, bro.
Yeah. And that's what I just loved as a narrative device. It's not really so much that he's having hallucinatory visions. It's just, that's just him thinking and processing it.
And it's just being shown very distracted by it.
I like that. I like that there was the bleed over between his fantasies and what was actually going on.
Yeah, the conversation with Dargo and the guppy.
That episode was so beautiful.
One to the other to the other. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I pointed out that great scene where Chiana is talking to Moya. And it's like they used the same lines for multiple takes. And it just to show that she's both, you know, trying there for Moya, but also terrified of what's going to happen by being there for Moya.
Right.
She doesn't know what her choice is. And then she goes and makes a choice. And then she's still thinking, wait, did I make the right choice? It's just such a beautifully put together scene. That was just,
and
God,
then she
that last episode was just such a surprise.
Yeah.
And let's talk
about talent.
You know, here's the thing. Moya is in this last year. I have a coworker whose son, who has mental problems, has been getting more and more violent and aggressive and unstable over the course of the year, and she only just now got the news that he has a degenerative brain disease.
Oh.
And it's, I can so see the reflection of this and Moya of at some point. You can try to protect your kid as much as you want, but at some point you have to admit he's wrong. It's wrong. He's broken. You can still try to help him as best you can, but there's still only so much you can do. And it's just, it's been just such an odd personal arc to see that happen both on this show and in life. Sorry, I just, you know, like,
no, it's that
pulled the emotional rug out from my
Yeah. Well, in that, it actually puts that in a interesting, in a very like interesting and very
wants the best for their kids and to protect their kids, but there are just some kids you can't fix,
right?
And all you, and with Talon, it was just, you know, he's beyond fixing. Let him go out in the best way he can, and then that, and then that you would fight so fiercely to make sure that what he did was recognized.
Oh, of course.
Talon, son of Moya, well, offspring of Moya.
That was just great. Chiana struggling to make the speech and Rigel just cutting right in over her.
Well,
and he, something so ostentatious, but still in a very rude Rigel way.
And well, he made that fantastic speech without any of the usual derogatory remarks that he says about possessions or the special hell that we go to and the hell that you go to.
He is the leader of a multi-planetary government. If anybody knows how to do a proper funereal service, it's the political leader of a major government. I mean, he's trained in this
since birth.
I mean, Rigel is if anybody is going to do justice to this, it's going to be him.
What I love about Rigel is so much of his bluster is false. In that he's trying to cover for his own fears and his own insecurities. Like in this last episode, he was all, let's get out of here. Let's leave it be and all stuff. But then when they decide, they come up with a plan, charge into battle, he's like, go get her, old gal, you know? He's right there for her.
Well, Rigel's been on Moya the longest,
pulling
too.
Up the pomp of he's the one taking charge now.
Yeah, he's been on Moya the longest. He's got the he's got the most connection to her that anyone has.
Well, Chiana delivered her baby, so...
Yeah,
which is why I
think it's at this point that like with possibly the exception of Jewel, and even that's starting to kind of make its way there. There's not really anybody on in the crew who doesn't have some kind of very strong connection with Moya.
Yeah, she's the They're home bonding. That's also a person. She's literally the living home.
She's the home that loves everybody who lives in her.
Mm-hmm.
Not all the time, but.
No, she loves them. She doesn't necessarily like to stand. She can't stand them
all the time. It's like a mom in a minivan, you know.
Yeah, but she still loves them unconditionally.
She's what she did if the mom and the minivan were one and the same.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that sounds like a Stephen King book.
It does, actually.
It was a humorous TV show. It was a humorous TV show, My Mother the Car.
Seriously?
Yeah, you've never heard of My Mother the Car?
I have never heard of Your Mother the Car.
Wasn't that like also like a Dexter's Lab episode? Well,
and then she joined reference to and became My Mother the Flying Car the Nun.
A mother and a nun?
Well, it was supposed to be the flying mother car nun, but
never mind.
Stark.
Stark. Yay, Stark. Who didn't disappear without explanation. And I'm hoping that he doesn't come back with that. Wouldn't that be fun as if when he comes back in season 4, I'm sorry if I'm spoiling this for you, Tessa, he comes back in season 4.
If everyone turned
around and goes, Stark, hey, there you are.
Like, oh, I was just standing slightly to the left of the camera.
Everyone's standing
there
and talking,
time.
And then the camera just pans left and Stark is there.
It would
and
be
then,
funny
and
if,
then
like,
have
if like
him, have him do like an entire freak out about who is this Nana Peepers who just shows up all of a sudden? Where did she come from? It's unexplained. Has she ever told you? You know, that would be funny.
Yeah.
And why is she acting so crazy?
That would be. Who is this crazy person who just showed up out of nowhere?
Absolutely, Stark and Nana Peepers would get along so very well. She
or
would
not at all.
Or not at all.
And he would cut it in half. And say, this is my half of the souffle, that's your half, my half, your half. And then she would, I guess, cut it into thirds, and he would be like, huh.
Well, you know what's interesting is that when Zan died early on in the season.
Poor Zan.
And while she did leave a very unquantifiable presence with everybody, she also left a very... very much quantifiable legacy where Zan was always three things. She was the mother figure, mm-hmm. She was the spiritual figure, and she was the scientific figure. She was and when she died, you had Stark picking up the spiritual side, and then you had Jewel, who was taking
care of the
science
stuff. Scientific, the medical.
Well, the science, the medical and everything, and then actually you actually have Dargo taking over as the parent, and he's kind of been the father to everybody. And,
yeah, or him and Chiana kind of become the two parents together.
And so Zan not only lives on in spirit, but she also lives on through the other characters.
Through
as
what
well.
She's left behind, yeah.
Yeah, her legacy is still alive and well.
Exactly.
She made such a huge impact on everybody, with the exception of Jewel. That,
maybe that's why Jewel isn't so awesome, because she didn't spend any time with Zan.
Yeah,
It didn't rub off properly.
That would have been interesting. Like what would that relationship have been like?
Zan probably would have killed
you
her
insufferable
within an
child.
Like it would have been
a lot like Zan.
And then he would have had an episode where
like
she's struggling
Tiana,
with the guilt that she just murdered someone
even
again.
Even worse.
Yeah.
She would have turned into her red eye mode.
Oh god.
She's gone all Cylon.
You are not on spring break anymore, young lady, and you will listen to what I say, or I will shove you out the airlock, and Pilot will cackle hilariously. So let's talk about Pilot. Pilot got a lot of development in this, in that he, through the entire series from the very beginning, he's been kind of coming into his own. And I'm usually the one that keeps mentioning all the stuff that is going on with Pilot and with his friendship with Aaron and his...
You didn't get a whole lot of that this season.
Not this season, because Aaron hasn't been around.
Yeah, exactly.
And
more separation.
People that Pilot really got along with is Crichton, and there are plenty of times where Pilot just gave up and was like, look,
the entire episode,
which is
just kicking him off the ship.
Yeah. But which says a lot about Pilot in that these are this is the Pilot who let all these people cut his arm off and didn't really do much but grumble at them afterwards. And here he is making the decisions as where is he and Moya get to go and who gets to be on the ship and making his first kill with spacing that crazy woman that. Granted, the solar flare killed her, but he was the one who spaced her.
Yeah.
And it's just, Pilot himself has really come into his own lately.
Right.
He's kind of...
He's no longer the meek, I cannot do it for you, Captain type.
I mean, he's still. I mean, he's still one of the relatively youngest people on the ship, but he's really starting to. Now that he's seeing the stars and he's seeing that flying among the stars is fantastic, but there's a lot of scary and really horrible things out there. He's starting to harden enough.
But he's also learning a lot about attachments.
Right.
And you get the sense that, you know, he's him and Moira are kind of crushed that everyone's kind of breaking up and wanting to leave now.
Mm-hmm. Because he loves them anyway. I mean, he right. as
it's
as
like
much
you might
as
need
bickers,
a weekend without him every now and then, but
mm-hmm.
still close.
As much as he bickers with Crichton constantly now, there was that wonderfully touching moment between Crichton and Pilot where, what was it, he was holding Pilot's shell head mm-hmm. and
yeah, they headbumped.
Kissed it, yeah.
It was fantastic.
I mean, you have to remember, Crichton was one of the people who was against cutting the arm off.
Mm-hmm.
Crichton and Aaron were the two who were against that. So.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but basically, the thing is about Crichton is that one of the reasons that he does snark so much with Pilot back and forth and the bicker is that Crichton was also one of the first people to actually treat Pilot as an actual person instead of, you know, another function of the ship.
Right, and what I like is that Crichton's bickering with him, it isn't negative. He's not always tearing Pilot a new one. It's more just that's the type of bickering of how his trying to work out the problem.
We mm-hmm. need to do this. Why can't you do this for us?
When Pilot tells him why he can't, he's like, okay, let's move on to another idea.
It's not like, why are you so stupid? Why can't you do this? It's like, well,
it's
what's
not like
the holdup?
Constantly
what's the problem?
Pilot.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. like, no, it, but it, it's like, well, we need to do this. Tell me what the problem is, because you just saying that you can't do it doesn't help me.
Exactly.
So
where's the problem? And then he goes to try and see what he can do. Yeah.
And when every single time Pilot says, Crichton, I need you to do this, you notice that Crichton never hesitates. He never says,
right.
Well, I can't do this.
Exactly.
He says, well, give me what I need to do it.
Well, because he knows that Pilot wouldn't bother him with it if it wasn't something important.
Right. He'd say, well, give me more specifics, and yes. Like,
I also love that Pilot continues to call him Commander.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, Pilot gets less and more formal depending on the seriousness of the situation, but he defaults to calling him...
He's never
him,
called him John, has he?
I don't think he's ever called him John, but he has called him Crichton.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think... I think Pilot and...
He's only used one first name, hasn't he, with...
Aaron.
Zan.
He's
well, Zan only
he's,
has
he's,
one
he said
name.
Aaron before, and Dargo only has one name, Chiana only has one name, Rigel only has one name. He has said Aaron. I think Pilot and... Has Jewel said John? Or has she always said Crichton? I think Pilot, out of respect, and Jewel, out of indifference, those are the only two people who have now not called him John.
I loved that
I think she has called him John. I'm trying to remember.
Has
but
she?
I can picture her voice saying it. So maybe she has, maybe
John.
She hasn't.
Well, maybe
I can't say for certainty.
I love that line at the end of this last episode where he is trying to have that final conversation with Aaron, and she calls him Crichton, and he just says, "My name is John."
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That whole scene.
Oh,
just,
God.
Oh, man.
So perfect. And then I love how it's like they can't even walk away from each other. They got to walk back up and do the coin toss.
Yeah.
They try to walk away, but it's like,
they both
damn
have
it,
to have
okay,
the last
get
word.
The coin. Yeah.
They both have to have the last word.
We don't see the result of the coin toss.
Not immediately.
Well, yeah. Imagine though, if you're watching this on TV, it cuts away, and that's the 3 minutes you got to wait.
Yeah.
Then you see the result, and then you realize, oh, okay, didn't fall in his
And he's hanging out there in the pod.
And he's trying
alone,
to think of the good thoughts, and then
memories.
They just fade away like everything else.
And Tessa's tired of me doing this, but every single time she grumbles about a cliffhanger, I say, you only have to wait 1 or 2 weeks.
Right.
Yes.
We've had the entire summer and then a cancellation.
I didn't grumble this time.
Not this time.
So Farscape Season of Death, where do we go from here?
Season of Life?
Season of Let's Move On and Just Do Stuff.
Season of Love?
Season of Random Wormhole.
Season
Farscape
Witch.
Season 4.
Nicolas Cage
getting
control.
The band back together. Maybe.
Season 4. We're on a mission from Kahenu.
Yes.
Mission from Leviathan God.
We're on a Leviathan from God.
what does God want with a Leviathan?
Oh, God. That movie does not exist.
That's my favorite Star Trek movie.
That doesn't surprise me.
Seriously, I love that. I love Star Trek V. I don't know
why. That does not surprise me. But you like Highlander 2 also.
I haven't seen Highlander 2 in a while.
Oh, okay. I bet if you watch it, you will love it. Just because you're that kind of person.
I don't know entirely. I've seen Spoonie's review of it. I've heard from other people who've watched it recently. It doesn't seem like something that would hold up for me. I just find a lot of depth to Star Trek V that a lot of people don't see.
So,
Andrew Hura does a fan dance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look, things that we're looking forward to for season 4.
Crazy old lady.
Well, it's kind of hard for us to say this with Tessa on, because some of us kind of know things that happen in season 4.
All right, well, fine. Tessa, okay. Things that you're looking forward to.
What am I looking forward to? Because
you don't know what's coming.
Okay, well, first off, I'm interested to find out, you know, if there was actually any explanation for that wormhole, or if it was just a random thing that just decided to randomly happen. You know what? Actually, if they just came out and said, oh, yeah, hi, it's Stark.
The other end of the wormhole, he's like, guys, I've been looking everywhere for you.
I brought
your sight to my side, your sight to my side.
And you mean you don't remember that time I said that I had a wormhole generator?
Well, Creighton had my mask, so you know my whole face magic thing.
It's not you, Creighton, that's in trouble with your kids.
Gotta save your kids.
What else?
Stark has been sent to the Wild West. No, I'm sorry.
We already had that episode.
So what else are you looking forward to, Jeff?
I am looking forward to getting... Well, because we have the crew kind of split up at this point. Definitely Aaron has left, and definitely Dargo has left.
And Chiana.
Chiana and Rigel might have left. I don't... Mm-hmm. As far as... Like, the only person we know is still there is Jewel, right?
Jewel and the old woman.
I think it was Jewel
and
who was
the only people left on Moya.
Jewel and Nana Peepers. Yeah.
Right. I couldn't remember if Rigel and Chiana had actually left or if they just.
I think so, because remember he was having memories of them too while he was in the
of them saying goodbye. That's true. Yeah.
They said bye.
Or the words of wisdom they left him with. Yeah.
Right. So they all have gone off their separate ways now, making the assumption that we're getting those characters back, which I am making that assumption, and I could be wrong, but making that assumption. I'm interested to find out how they all meet up again and what might have happened in the meantime.
I can't remember either is I can't remember if they keep them apart for a while like they did in this season or if they all come back together. So I'm curious to see that.
And because
I remember and I'm not
with,
telling.
With the exception of Aaron, all of the ones who have left with a specific goal in mind.
Right.
And they all have their own.
At least you know where to find them.
Right, they all have their own goals and their own things going on that they're chasing after, and depending on how long it is before they're all reunited, it'll be really interesting to find out what happened with each of them. I would love to see like individual episodes with each of them where we find out what's been happening with them, assuming that that kind of thing happens. But I don't know if that's going to happen, and I'm just like making up random speculations at this point. So,
speculation is always a good thing.
I would love to see that, like to see some kind of like each of those people getting each of those characters getting their own episode where they are now trying
to. They all have to revisit the past that they left behind when they came to Moya.
That would be
exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Season of death, so this will be the season of going back to the ghost of Christmas past, settling the
back
old scores, basics. Tying up the loose ends.
Well, because you have Dargo, who is going off for revenge against
his in-law,
and he's armed with both with the location where he was last, and a ship that can. Destroy.
One shot a Leviathan.
Yeah. Something's going to happen there.
That actually would be a natural progression because, usually when we encounter death in life, we kind of reflect back on our past and what are the...
Exactly.
What are the threads that we've left behind? And so that would actually be a very natural progression.
We need to see where we've been to know where we're going.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that, like, each of those stories, because then, like, Chiana has going to find her brother who is in the middle of this resistance.
The Navarre Rebellion, yeah.
And then Rigel is going back to try to upset the political balance of his own kingdom and try to take control back again. Like, any, like, all three of those stories would be fascinating to explore on their own.
Yes. And they have an entire season, which means they can fit all four of them in.
There was a brief scene between Aaron and Jewel where Aaron said that she was going off to join some peacekeeper assassination squad, and Jewel was like, that seems like a step back. And then Aaron broke her thumb.
Yeah.
Well, let me just...
It seems like as soon as John somehow finds his way back to Moya, assuming that that happens also, that the thing forefront on his mind is finding Aaron again. So out of everybody, unless this becomes, which actually would be kind of cool too, if the entire season just becomes a chase to go try to find Aaron and they actually run into everybody else along the way, unless that happens, which probably won't, Aaron is likely the one to come back first. So we'll see what happens.
And then Patrick Duffy walks out of the shower.
While Crichton hums the 1812 overture. We haven't gotten there yet.
No, we haven't. Kevin, jeez.
I don't think it's that much of a plot point to give away that Crichton hums the 1812 overture.
No.
How awesome was that shot of the wall of water coming down the steps?
That was so amazing.
Let's talk about the visuals.
And I talked about this in my thing for it, but it was like the ship or the command carrier being destroyed and imploding was like so, especially that scene with the water cascading down the stairs. It like brought to mind a ship, an actual like ship sinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Titanic, basically, and
the pyrotechnics going off.
Especially that scene with Scorpius just walking up those stairs and like. Totally,
like the man begins to play.
I just love
gentlemen, it has been an honor.
I just love the whole sinking, except the sunken acceptance on Scorpius.
He
just realizes
he can't stop this.
I can't stop this.
Yeah, it's Walter's like as soon as he gives that command to abandon the ship, he like at that point he has just accepted that he's just lost everything, and he's just so calm and so like accepting that this has just happened.
And then doesn't want all those stairs to die.
The whole showdown, the last stare down between him and John, it's more as they're almost friends in that moment than they are foes.
Right. Mm-hmm. He has no reason to.
John realizes what he's taken from this man.
Yeah.
Everything.
And he doesn't do it with joy. He does it knowing that he just completely ruined a person.
Well, he tries to
save him.
Save him at that point. And I said this in the thing too, and so I'm just like basically. Retreading the ground that I did on that post, but I love that, you know, the first words that, well, not the first words, but like one of the first things that Scorpius says to Crichton when he gets on the command carrier is that the rift between us has finally been breached, and then the thing separating the two,
the rift between them is still there even more so than ever.
Right.
And now it's on fire.
And although, yet they have a much better understanding of one another.
Yeah, they're separated by a rift of fire, but not much else, is what my point was, that they're more alike now than they were different.
Right.
It's almost as though the physical rift has brought the personal rift together.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's
such a deep show. So many layers. The colors, man, the colors.
I mean, I'm really...
It was a really good film class. I gotta tell you.
What was I saying? Oh yeah. I'm really interested to find out whether or not Scorpius is still around. Because again, like it's one of those things that the assumption is that he went down with the ship because that's what it looked like happened. Then again, it's one of those things where we didn't see it happen. There is no body.
We've already had an entire season where for half the season people thought he was dead.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he could still be around. Now, at the same time, with Harvey being a character in his own right, they could kill off Scorpius and still...
And still have Harvey, yeah.
Right, and still have...
A Scorpius.
blanking on the actor's name.
Wayne Pygram.
Wayne Pygram, yeah. And still have him around and doing his thing. Now, it wouldn't quite be the same, but still. And then, in that eventuality, if Scorpius is alive, what is he doing now?
Right, and then, of course, there's Helen Glaze.
Yes.
He's looking for a new way to get revenge.
Yeah, well, and see, the thing is that if Scorpius does survive, more than likely he does not have his position in the Peacekeepers anymore. Like, right. At that point. Like, there's no way he could recover. Well, I shouldn't say no way, but it's unlikely that he would recover with his rank intact.
Right.
And he does, like, very explicitly state that he has no interest in taking revenge on John.
See, that's going to be the interesting thing to revisit. I'm going to be giving something away if I say that, so I won't.
Uh-oh.
Well, but let's not forget that we've got Commandant Cleavage, who has a personal hate-on for Crichton now.
Yes.
And that the Skarrens are still out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, she's got a plump hatred that she's heaving up.
We went over this already.
Sorry. Boobs.
Over it and around it.
I had fun with that paragraph.
It was a good paragraph. It was a very clever paragraph.
The busty woman with the booby breast.
Yes. Well, now that you've fully kept us abreast of the situation, we can finally get past these memories.
Okay, pasty it on us.
I'm not going to nipple and dime you.
Okay, you know what? I'll be right back. I'm going to go punch Kevin in the face.
This is not really my areola of expertise here. Come on.
Well.
Oh, crap. She's actually coming out to punch me.
I'm making him wait for it.
But okay, no, well, let's just cup the situation and move on.
Anyway, but yeah, we've got Commandant Cleavage here, and the Skarrens are still out there. And even though we know that they didn't really do anything with them in the Mari, there's still the Numbari out there. There's a lot of, I mean, there's still a lot of conflict to be going on with the.
They're not anywhere close to running out of things. It's just that when it comes to Scorpius specifically. Right. It would be very interesting if he is still alive to see where he goes, because...
Well, again, Scorpius also has those same enemies.
Oh, yeah.
Greyza and the Skarrens.
And the Skarrens, yeah.
So...
And that's the one thing that actually disappointed me a little bit this season, if I just do a tiny tangent here, was they actually finally established for us a good Skarren, a good guy Skarren, who works with our heroes, and then they kill him in the next episode.
Not only do that, but they kill him off screen in such a cheap way.
By Talon, like, yeah.
Oh, by the way, now he's dead.
By Talon.
Well, but by doing that actually gave what Talon did more weight.
Yes.
It did, yeah.
But it was just...
You killed him.
It wasn't just 600 innocent people. It was also the lovable, cute Skarren.
If it's our characters versus the Skarrens, it would be kind of interesting to actually have a Skarren on their side, but that would almost make it a little too easy.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it would just, I don't know, it just felt like that was a character they could have explored more.
Well, the Skarrens...
But the best opportunity almost makes his death even more powerful.
Wait.
The Skarrens could do with...
Skarren?
Yes. I said lovable.
His glowy eyes. They glow from the power of his heart.
The Skarrens could do with more, I guess, graying, if that makes sense. Similar to what we've gotten in the Peacekeepers, that we've actually seen quite a few. Like, even when the Peacekeepers have been front and center as our villains,
even within the Peacekeepers, like, people are still individuals who have different
motives.
Exactly,
it's like they're not.
Peacekeepers are kind of their all great white chicks.
Pure evil,
and
we got to see
the heroic Peacekeepers when we went back in time too.
Right, mm-hmm.
Those were the heroic
Peacekeepers.
That was Peacekeepers.
What they were originally supposed to be before they became too big and corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really have that with the Skarrens. The only one we have. It gets killed off right away, and also...
Well, we have one more, and unfortunately he's Scorpius.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's one of those things that, like, I kind of have to wonder how much of his non-threatening nature was just because he had...
He was stuck in a situation that he couldn't really...
Right. He had no options available to be what we'd seen from other Skarrens. I'm curious whether or not that was just because that was who
he was. And actually, if you look at his behavior, he's very mild. He was almost neutered when they took out his heat glands. You have to wonder how much tied that is into their emotions.
Right.
You know, he was neutered.
And so it's we haven't really seen a trying to think how to put it a fully functional Skaren who has not been who has not followed a very specific formula.
Right. They are a very monolithic species.
They're tyrannosaur.
Not paleolithic.
Sharks. That's about it.
Not paleolithic. Monolithic.
They're tyrannosaur sharks. That's all you need to know.
With lasers for hands.
Yes.
They're dinosaurs, and they have laser guns, and those laser guns also shoot tacos.
Tacos.
Well, we should probably wrap this up by now, because
I think
we've kind of covered this season inside and out.
This was a
and
really
even
good
in a few episodes we got to see people inside out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This was really a good season to do. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. I am looking forward to the next one.
As am we.
Well, this has been season 3 of Deconstructing Moya, big season wrap up thing. Join us next week when we've got the next episode, the first episode of season 4, Triton Kicks. And don't forget to take a look at the Season 1 compilation ebook that we've got up for only, what was it, $2? $1?
I think
so. I think it was $2.
I don't remember how much I set to charge for that.
Together, we'll do Season 2.
$1.99.
$2. $2.
So, thank you for joining us so far, and we hope that you join us on the other side. For more information on this and other Made of Fail projects, please visit Made of Fail Productions at madeoffail.net. Deconstructing Moya offers in-depth discussion and reviews of the episodes of Farscape at farscape.madeoffail.net. Our comment sections have been left open, so feel free to join in on the fun. This has been a Made of Fail production.